you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 240 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyra, your host. And today my guest is Nick Laydorf. And Nick is a estate and planning attorney out of Lansing, Michigan. And we had the distinction of going to the same law school together, which you'll hear us talk about a little bit. And Nick is has made the transition from being a criminal defense attorney to being a trusted estates attorney. And we talk about the paradigm shift that is necessitated by going from that type of practice area to estate planning. And you'll also learn that Nick has a very active and successful comedian, stand-up comedian career. So that kind of dovetails nicely, I think, with his approach to the practice of law. And so it's bound to be kind of an entertaining episode here. I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. So without any further delay, here's my friend Nick Laydorf. Nick Laydorf, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Hey, thank you so much.
I'm thrilled to have you with us here today, Nick. Tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Yeah, so I'm a lawyer in Michigan. I've been a lawyer for 14 years now, and graduate of Catholic University School of Law, which is we actually went at the same time.
At the same time.
And we didn't know it, and then we were part of the same class of for legal funnels, and just kind of got to know each other because we're both practicing estate planning attorneys, and so yeah, I've been 14 years. I've been basically a litigator for 12 of those 14, primarily criminal defense and civil rights litigation, and then just got completely burnt out and was just trying to look for ways to survive past 40, I think. So I really, really, because of a family situation, I had someone pass and go through a probate situation, and I was like, this is something that's really difficult. How can I help people go through this? Because it was something that I had no experience from, just being a litigator. So yeah, I kind of have made that transition, and just been really learning a lot in the last 2 years, more than I ever have.
Here you are. Yeah. So I don't have to tell you that they didn't teach us anything about running a business, a law practice in law school, because I was there.
Yep.
So
exactly,
that's the whole reason for what we do here today. So let's just kind of go back a little bit. Had you always had your eye on law school? What brought you to law school, and why Catholic?
Yeah. So I had always wanted to be a lawyer ever since junior high. And no one really talked me out of it, and I didn't have it.
No really good friends who looking exactly out for your best interests, right?
Right. Yeah. I knew no lawyers, and so my life was going along pretty well up until that point. And I had, it's just something I always wanted to do. I went to Michigan State University on I actually got a partial Quiz Bowl scholarship because we won a Quiz Bowl tournament and got a year of tuition there. And then went to Michigan State University. And then I went to University of Miami Law School down in Florida for a year. And I think that I should have learned that to just stop, because I did not like Miami at all. It was just super hot. Yeah. For a kid from the Midwest.
Yeah, right.
It was like 2 days of that was under like 80 degrees. And so my wife and I, we were down there, and she was my girlfriend at the time, and she got into Peabody Conservatory, which is now part of Johns Hopkins University up in Baltimore. So I, you know, made the decision to transfer. And, you know, I had no idea what, I didn't even know there was a Catholic University of America. And I got into there, and, you know, moved and, you know, finished up my last 2 years traveling back and forth from Baltimore to DC every day. So,
you know, one of the discriminating factors, you know, when we talk to attorneys in the program and, you know, we ask like, what TV show inspired you to become an attorney? Oh, you know, because like, if you're old like me, it was Perry Mason.
Okay.
Of course, we just had the reboot of Perry Mason on HBO, which was fantastic.
Oh, it did? Oh, I haven't seen that.
That's fantastic. It was the same guy who was in The Americans.
Okay.
Plays, I forget his name, plays Perry Mason. It's pretty interesting. Nice. So if you're an old guy like me, it was Perry Mason or maybe L.A. Law. That was big.
Yep.
So what were the TV shows that legal TV shows that influenced your decision?
Yeah, I think just Law and Order. I think that was that was it for me. And My Cousin Benny. I think that was that was fun.
Right.
So I think those two things really influenced that.
Yeah, Law and Order. You know, it's the source of every legal question asked of an attorney. Hey, can I just ask you a quick question? I saw this on Law and Order. Could that happen?
Yeah.
Yeah, but not in the course of an hour. Yes, it could.
Right.
Stretch it out. So you knew you wanted to be an attorney, and probably you just kind of fell into litigation.
Yeah,
because that's what you thought an attorney did.
Yeah, I was, when I was at Catholic, I clerked at the Court of Federal Claims, and I really wanted to clerk for a federal judge, and kind of had, you know, aspirations to do that, and had some ins that I was probably going to get at least something. And then my dad passed away during law school. And actually, I am very lucky that I went to Catholic, because I could not have had a group of professors or administration that helped me through that. That was obviously the most difficult time in my life up until that. And they were, I was like, oh, I don't know what's going to happen. I had to go back to Michigan for several weeks. And they're like, you know, just don't worry about anything. We're going to get you through this. And I couldn't have asked for, you know, it was just kind of fortuitous that I ended up going to that school, because there are other people that I've networked with, and they said that they had similar experiences and they had to take out a year and wait. Yeah. And Catholic was just so great.
I'm glad you make that point, because look, I poke fun of my alma mater often enough, and call them to task for their lack of training for attorneys from a business standpoint. Yeah. But and look, and I'm not Catholic, I'm not religious, I just went to the school,
right?
But I can assert as well that the faculty and the administration were top notch,
right?
And very caring and very understanding. We had a couple of incidents of classmates going through different things, and not the least of which, you know, within a month after starting law school was 9/11,
right? Yeah,
and so yeah, I feel kind of the same way. I'm very lucky that they would have me, and that I took them up on the offer, because, you know, I thought, even with some of their faults, I thought it was a great experience.
Right. But you're absolutely right. Like I learned absolutely nothing about how to run a business. I mean, that was, and I was ill prepared, because I thought I was like, oh, I'm just going to be a lawyer and I'm going to get a clerkship and I'll be all set after that. And then I ended up having to, you know, work for a firm after I moved back to Michigan after I graduated, and you know, no one had any idea where Catholic University was. They're like, "What school did you go to?" Yeah, it's a real one. I got a diploma and everything. It's pretty nice. And so I just had to, you know, start over, and you know, I worked for someone else, and I hated every minute of it, because the person was just a huge pile of garbage, and I did not like him whatsoever. And one day I just was like, "Okay, that's it. I'm just going to start my own business," and that was in 2000 and 2008. So, and then I've just been on my own ever since.
So you had that defining event where you learned that you could no longer work in this environment that you were working in, and instead of finding a different environment, you decided, you know what, how hard can it be to start a business?
Right.
Yeah. You know? Let me just jump off that gangplank, Garrett.
Yeah. Well, I think it was hard enough for me to get a job with my, you know, when no one knew where I was going to school the first time. And then, to be quite honest with you, like the situation that made me quit is the partner in this firm was with a secretary in his office next to mine, and they were not talking about the law. And I was like, okay, that's I'm enough done. For me. I'm done.
Yeah. So I didn't have exactly the same experience, but getting a job was difficult because I went to law school late in life, and there's not many people going to hire an associate who's pushing 50.
Mm-hmm.
And don't tell anybody I said that out loud.
Yeah,
I can edit that out. And, you know, I had already been in business for myself. And so I thought, well, I already made all the mistakes I can possibly make in starting a business. So starting a law firm can't be that much more difficult. Little did I know that doing so had its own set of mistakes to make, which I've now promptly, you know, completed all of those. I've made all of those mistakes on top of the previous ones.
Yeah.
So if learning from your mistakes is, you know, something to aspire to, then I have, you know, a PhD in that respect. So let's talk about it. So you jump into the fire, you start a solo practice. What was your vision of the practice at the time? Did you see yourself as a, in a brick and mortar setting? Did you see yourself, you know, entertaining after hours in the office as I did? You know, what was your view?
I think mine was, just from the experiences that I had working for someone else, is that clients were not getting served, and they were not getting, no one was calling them back. You know, it was a difficult environment to work with, and I felt bad for these people that weren't, you know, on my files. Like I, you know, I had my own files that I was, you know, working, and I would see these people either come in or, you know, and or they'd be pissed, and I could hear the phone calls, and I was like, I want to start this where I want to treat the client how I would want to be treated, especially doing, you know, criminal defense and things like that.
You get a lot of questions. Starting point.
Yeah. And so I gave all my clients my cell phone number, and like, you can call me, and that's, I've learned from that. I still do, but I kind of keep some boundaries with it. But I just wanted people to know that, you know, they've got somebody that, you know, is going to help them. And they're just, after you hire me, it's not going to be the last time you're going to talk to me. You know, so there's going to be questions, you know, and that's stressful at times. And I, you know, it's overwhelming at times because you get calls on the weekend and after hours and things like that. But I wanted to be available. And that was kind of my niche when I started out, is because there are a lot of established attorneys that were just not great at bedside manner or customer service. And I think that that's really kind of set me apart when I was young. And, had a full head of hair. So,
did you do the brick and mortar office?
Oh yeah, yep, I did. Huh? So I just in downtown Lansing, I shared space with a more established lawyer, and you know, he would send me some stuff that maybe he didn't want or, you know, didn't have time for. So I would, you know, do that. And yeah, so I was kind of more focused on brick and mortar, you know. Now, not so, yeah.
Has that remained the case? Are you still in the same location, or did you move on?
Different location. I've been in a couple different locations since then. I'm in like an old house, like renovated from like the 1860s, which is really cool. Right over by the Capitol in Lansing, Michigan. But it's nice. I do tend to believe that we don't obviously need to practice in a brick and mortar setting anymore. And so, yeah, I'm always mindful of like, how can I do things in a much more, smart, intelligent way to use my time, just because it's me with very little support. So
you are adding virtual capabilities.
Yeah. So that's the one thing that
kind of have to in this day.
Yeah. And I think that being a solo and being able to make your own decisions has really allowed me to thrive in this, because I was able to adapt very quickly to, okay, we're doing virtual now. So, all right, some people are going to probably be upset with that. Other firms that are established in this huge offices down in Lansing, but what can I do that's different than them? And I can just go to wherever people are at. So I can be, you know, on Zoom and offer this to people. I can figure out ways to serve people in a non-traditional lawyer model. Like, that's kind of one of my personality traits, is I want to do things differently than everybody else.
Yeah.
And so that's, I think probably why I started on my own.
Had you already transitioned then to estate planning when the move to go more virtual took place, or were you in the process of going virtual when you decided to go to do estate planning? Like, which is the chicken, which is the egg?
Yeah. So I had not chosen to go fully virtual when I started doing estate planning. I think it just kind of morphed into like an opportunity to be able to serve more people. You know, Michigan's a pretty big state geographically. But I think it lends itself to being able to serve, you know, basically anybody in Michigan via Zoom, and then setting up some, you know, ways of getting documents notarized and things like that. But yeah, so that
what came first certainly is the transition. Certainly increases your footprint opportunity.
Right.
You know, when, as you say, when you do criminal defense work, unless you have a lot of resources, you're going to be kind of focusing more generally around your physical location.
Yep.
And the court that you predominantly appear in, or courts that you predominantly appear in.
Yep.
But with an estate planning practice, you literally reach to the state's borders.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yep. If you have the means of doing that.
Yeah. I mean, when I started doing litigation on my own, this was back when websites really mattered. You know, like, I don't think so much websites matter as much anymore. It's a box to check off.
Yep.
But I think back then, especially the criminal defense, when you need to have some sort of presence where people can find you, I invested in that, you know, in a really functional website that was most importantly SEO optimized, so that people were able to find me. And as a result, like, there's 83 counties in Michigan, and I've represented clients in like over 65 by now. So like, I've gone all over the state of Michigan, and I was fortunate that, you know, that I put some thought into that, and it really paid dividends for, you know, for years after that, when it was really, when I really needed to make, you know, money doing criminal defense. So I would go different, you know, many different courts and, you know, so, but now it's a completely different animal.
Yeah, I was going to say, talk a little bit about the paradigm shift, because the whole nature of the practice from a litigation standpoint to a transactional standpoint is significantly different. And for a lot of folks, that's a tough shift to deal with. So talk about your experience.
Yeah, it's you know, just from a client's perspective, you know, criminal defense is like, oh, my pain points right now, this is happening, someone's in jail, or the cops are at my house. And so the advertising is, you know, has to be responsive to that. Like, you're gonna look at you know, probably Google to find somebody for criminal defense lawyer. And so I wanted to make myself, you know, as accessible and view, you know, get as many views as possible on Google and things like that before people were really transitioning, you know, back in 08 or 09 and things like that. And then when, you know, now to estate planning, you know, as you know, it's a completely, you've got to educate your audience more than criminal defense, to tell them like, hey, this is something you should be paying attention to. Whereas with criminal offense, it's like, hey, there's a problem because there's a cop at my house right now, and he wants to serve a search warrant. But with estate planning, it's like, some people don't even know that there's an issue. Like, they've got a minor listed as a beneficiary on a life insurance policy, you know, something like that. Where like, oh, you mean that's an issue? Like, and it takes more to get them to become a client. You know, the funnel is much bigger.
I think you've described that completely accurately. You know, the practice areas like criminal defense, family law,
right,
personal injury. People go to find an attorney because something's happened to them in some way. Yep. And so you want to be discoverable. You want them to be able to find you and find you at the top of the list. And so mostly that does mean, this day and age, that means a website that is optimized and, you know, a lot of money spent, or potentially a lot of money spent in Google AdWords so that you get to that top of the list. But as you said, for transactional practice such as estate planning, elder law, or, you know, some of those others, they may not ever know that something that they need to do.
Yeah, exactly.
And so you need to bring that consciousness forward. And that changes how you market. It changes how you advertise, how you structure your law firm. It really is completely different in my humble opinion.
Yeah, I agree. Like I never would have thought as a litigator to do a webinar, you know, on the, I've done some stuff like that on, you know, on YouTube, just talking about that kind of thing. But now I'm really putting a lot of energy into creating something like that, where, you know, webinar, where, you know, going to educate people, about maybe here's some of the things that you need to do and pay attention to, so that, like, I got a call last night at like 6 o'clock, like, hey, so-and-so is in the hospital, what can we do? And it's like, well, some of the stuff we probably should have done ahead of time, but they just didn't think about it.
Right.
You know, it's so.
Right. Yeah. All right. So let's talk a little bit about how you do go about now marketing your firm, particularly in light of the new reality that we all live with.
Yeah. I like structure. I like systems. I like automation. I like to put things in place for myself that I'm going to do. So I've got like a content schedule that I try and stick to every week. So Monday, and it's a long term, you know, it's not a start it Monday and we're going to get, you know, six figures by Friday kind of a thing. So it's going to long term growth kind of schedule. So Monday, I send out a newsletter to my contact list, and, you know, I try and put some personal touches into it too, just so it's not so bland, because some of it can be kind of bland. We're talking about taxes and stuff like that. That's not really fun to get in your email inbox on Monday morning, but. If I can, I'm a comedian too. So I try and make things as entertaining as possible, my newsletter list. And so I do that Monday. Tuesday, I'll kind of comment and share like a estate planning article that I think was kind of, you know, important. Wednesday, I'll do a Facebook Live like around, you know, noon, and like an ask me anything kind of thing. Like, so people can send me, you know, questions about, you know, anything basically. I try and tailor it to, you know, estate planning now, but a lot of people, I'm still, you know, trying to educate them that, hey, I made the switch to estate planning now. So I'll answer some other, you know, questions about other areas of law too. You know, and then Thursday I do something like from Family Guy, Peter Griffin, what grinds my gears. So I'll share something that's kind of funny about the law or estate planning, different things, just to kind of bring people in as much as possible. And then Friday, I'll have some other kind of piece of content that I'll share. And I'll do that on a pretty regular basis at the same time every day, and planning it out too in advance. So if I can automate stuff and schedule things ahead of time, I'll get that done. And then also, you know, I am, you know, I've created a funnel a way of bringing people in through Facebook ads. This is my first foray into Facebook ads. I've never, you know, like we talked about earlier, you know, Facebook is kind of an interruption kind of marketing, where you got to, you know, hey, we just scroll past this. Hey, pay attention to this kind of thing, as opposed to like a Google search, you know what you want. You're going to go type in some keywords and find somebody that you want. So this is my first foray into like Facebook ads. And then kind of what I'm going to launch in the next few weeks is a webinar, about 45 minutes. So I'm going to have some marketing going into that, do it a couple times a month, and then probably record it at some point and then have it available for people to watch if they, you know, enter the funnel and want to engage and take a look at that. So I think that's kind of what I'm doing right now.
Today's episode is brought to you by the team at Spotlight Branding. For many years, lawyers like you have spent thousands of dollars on marketing campaigns that generate tons of leads, but often left many of them in the dust once the campaign ended. Spotlight Branding has found a better way. Their content loop system not only nurtures all of your leads and contacts in perpetuity, but it's done by pushing out quality evergreen content that elevates your credibility and helps the rest of your marketing efforts actually work. Spotlight Branding's content loop makes it nearly impossible for your network to forget about you, which means they'll think of you first when they or someone they know needs legal help. Spotlight Branding has turned hundreds of lawyers across the country into the go-to attorney in their community with their content loop by producing engaging content that speaks to your clients' needs and fears, and they can do the same for you. To get started, they're offering listeners of The Law Entrepreneur a free download that explains the content loop and how you can put it into practice in your law firm's marketing strategy. Just go to spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in The Law Entrepreneur, spotlightbranding.com/TLE to get your copy. Spotlight Branding, more referrals, better clients, higher ROI. Now, if you've been a listener of this podcast for any time, you know that I sing the praises of Ruby all the time because they're really responsible in my own practice for helping me grow my business, deliver personalized experience to my clients, you know, building customer loyalty, really, in terms of having a consistent front-facing office partner in Ruby, and allows me to stay connected anywhere, anytime to my business through their services. So I can't say enough about Ruby. I'm delighted to have them and continue to have them as a sponsor of this podcast. And this episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Daylight, the all-in-one contact relationship manager, or CRM. I've been using Daylight for well over 10 years now, and it's the best CRM for business on the Mac and iPhone. And despite having a case management platform that I'm very happy with, I still use Daylight to handle all of my many other law firm needs. When you're running your own law firm, it can be difficult to stay on top of follow-ups, keep track of details and communication, and stay aware of what needs to be done next on each project. Daylight organizes everything in one place, so you don't have to rely on your memory to keep it all straight. If you're feeling like it's time to upgrade from spreadsheets to a CRM, check out Daylight. You can download it from the App Store or visit www.marketcircle.com and try it free for 30 days. On top of that, you can get your first month free when you tell them you heard about Daylight here on The Law Entrepreneur. Daylight by Market Circle, staying top of mind without the stress. Well, that's a lot to unpack there. So let's all right. let's kind of dive into this in piecemeal fashion. Just to be open and obvious about this, you and I both have been part of Sam Millay's. Legal Funnels program, and Sam was just on the show a couple of weeks ago talking about Legal Funnels. So our audience probably has a pretty good understanding of that, but let's just go ahead and kind of summarize that again. You're using Facebook ads to drive traffic to a landing page,
right?
And the landing page then asks the viewer in exchange for some content for their email address. And then they go into a email campaign series that nurtures that relationship and moves them closer and closer towards a decision point about hiring you.
Yep.
And so that's the whole Facebook ad funnel kind of thing in a nutshell. So are you using... You know, Sam advocates on top of the Facebook ads using ClickFunnels as your funnel manager, your landing page manager. And I think Constant Client Active Campaign as the email program. Are you following that? Or are you doing something different?
I am doing ClickFunnels. also, I was with MailChimp, and then this kind of prompted me to switch to ActiveCampaign because I didn't really like MailChimp that much. They've made some changes, but it just didn't feel right for me. I don't know. It's hard to put my finger on why I didn't really like it, but I do like ActiveCampaign. I think it's very intuitive. I like the way that, you know, you can plot it out with pictorials about what you're doing.
Yeah, one of the great things about ActiveCampaign is that it graphically represents your email system. So if you have conditional steps along the way, if this happens, then change the tag and branch out to a different series of emails. You can create these conditional branches, which you can do in other programs as well. I mean, I use AWeber just because I was vested in that platform before I started doing legal funnels. But ActiveCampaign has that really great graphical representation that makes it really much easier, I think, to be able to design robust email campaigns.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And even for, you know, attorneys.
Right. Yeah. I tend to consider myself pretty tech savvy. That's one of the things I enjoy about this transition to estate planning, is that it lends itself very well to automation. And that's what I really enjoy about it, is how can I make things easier? The one thing that I took away from Sam's class that I absolutely love, and I tell everybody about it now, is MixMax. I really love that. Just the ability to send sequences and automated templates for emails. That's the first time I've really used any tools like that before, and I really am into it. I've got a lot of sequences that I've created and are creating, and it makes it a lot easier.
I don't think that Sam and I spoke a lot about that, so let's go over that for our audience as well. So MixMatch is a platform that, very similar to ActiveCampaign or AWeber, allows you to create sequence of email messages, but it's not necessarily within that same funnel. These are standalone sequences that you then can invoke using your regular email system, whether it be Gmail or Outlook, right?
Right. Yeah. So the way I look at it is, you know, ActiveCampaign is kind of like for like the anonymous person that you may not have had connections with yet. Right. And then I use MixMax for people that I have, you know, direct email contact with. So either current clients or maybe someone reached out to me or like a lead that I have. So I'll set up particular sequences for them to, you know, either have a link to my Calendly to book a call, or even in other areas of my practice where, like, I send someone a document. If they don't open it, it's got a reminder email to send them if they don't open it. And it's pretty, I really enjoy it. It saves me a lot of time.
Yeah. And it addresses this scenario, I think, perfectly. You know, you've got a whole bunch of presumably past clients in your criminal defense work.
Yep.
You have all that information, I'm sure, in your practice management platform or a spreadsheet or something.
Right.
Okay. Do you put them in the anonymous funnel all at once?
No.
I'm saying the answer is probably no. And this is where where MixMax really kind of gives you the best of both worlds, because you can invoke it on a, you know, client by client basis. You invoke the string of messages, and then it will automatically send these messages to that contact, you know, over the course of time. So they're not in your big funnel,
right?
But they're getting the same kind of benefits, as if they were.
Yeah, and then you don't have to. You can save so much time instead of having to write one-off emails all the time. You can, you know, if there's something you can identify, like I'm sending someone a document, how can I maybe save this as a template that I can? It's going to be useful for, you know, X, Y, and Z client down the road, and it's pretty easy to implement. The caveat is you have to use Chrome as a browser with it. It's an extension.
So that's one aspect of it. Now, I use Text Expander in much the same way.
Yep.
Okay. The difference is that Text Expander is a little more difficult to link sequential steps, snippets along the way, and make them different or separate emails. Mm-hmm. So I have the canned T template in Texas Spinner, and that saves me an enormous amount of time. But I can't link them together like you can in Mixmatch. Okay. So there's some trade-offs there.
Yeah.
So, and then when we look at your content scheduling, let me double back again. Sure. In terms of your Facebook ads, did you do them yourself or did you outsource that?
I've outsourced that. There's a company that I'm working with right now called Fireside. They're out of Colorado and mm-hmm. they've worked a lot with estate planning attorneys, and they do things a little different in terms of ad budgets. It's kind of counterintuitive. It's a long explanation. They, instead of charging based on how much you're spending, they are able to do it at a flat rate, which I thought was kind of maybe a little suspect, but I've kind of talked to a lot of the people that have used them and they're like, I've not seen any, they've really generated a lot of growth for them. So yeah, I've started working with them. I've been pretty happy so far.
And, great.
Yeah. Yep.
Great. That's interesting. Yep. Okay. So now coming back to content marketing. Yep. So you have actually kind of, fully realize this whole block scheduling mentality when it comes to yep. content marketing. You've assigned specific days to specific large projects, if you will. So yep. as you said, Monday was newsletter, Tuesday was social media updating, Wednesday was a Facebook Live Ask Me Anything event, Thursday, what grinds my gears, which I really love. I'm a subscriber there, so I really like that. And Friday kind of catches up with everything and adds some more to the pile. Yep. So when you say you schedule it out, what are you doing in terms of scheduling out in detail? Are you looking at mapping out topics and subject areas? And if so, how far out are you going?
Right now, only about a week, maybe in advance.
Right.
The next move is kind of hiring a virtual assistant. That's one thing that I have not done yet that I'm actually working on right now. In fact, I'm going to talk with someone later this afternoon about that. But then I think that's what I want to delegate to a VA to help me plan out some of those things that I don't have to do myself. But maybe have an idea and a list of different things, and then they can kind of fill in the blanks and plan it out a little bit more.
And would you envision the VA actually writing the content for you that you would then edit and put in your own voice?
Possibly. I do have a lot of newsletters already written that I've done in advance. And
you're industrious.
Yeah.
You need to write a newsletter in advance. I'm still writing them on a daily basis.
I try and do it at least a little bit ahead of time, and then I can schedule it. I did switch over to use ActiveCampaign for that as well. I really like it because then I can add tags to, to open it. Yeah, so I try and do it as much as possible. Sometimes that does not happen in reality, but I am a big believer in the block scheduling. Sometimes I don't adhere to it, but I found that the amount of stress in my life is way lower if I keep like within this, kind of. I change it every once in a while too, because things, certain projects and things happen. But but if I can say like between this hour and this hour, I'm going to focus on this, and if I don't get to it, okay, well then it's going to come back to the next one. It's a lot more freeing than just slogging away from to the time I get to the office, to the time I leave.
I have to confess, I understand block scheduling, theoretically, and I've seen lots of people put it into practice. This is probably the most, clear example of it that I've seen in a while. I still have trouble getting myself to adhere to it.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is the curse of being a true solo, because as a true solo, you can move that block around pretty easily.
Right.
If I had other people dependent on doing the work in that block, then I'd be less inclined to move the block around. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. I completely get it. And, sometimes it's like, it's hard to, if something pops up, to have that kind of, I don't know. It's hard for me too, because if something pops up, something needs something immediately. Yeah. I kind of always really want to get that done. And sure. I don't think that's the best way to do it. You know what I mean? It's hard to put my finger on it, but maybe to assign it and wait on it until I can finish up something instead of just, you know, so I think we're more productive if we can focus on one thing for a period of time instead of getting
There's a lot of science that says that's exactly the case.
Yeah.
Where do you come up with your ideas?
You know, just like real life kind of stuff. You know, I try and they call it different things. You know, who your avatar is, like who's your ideal client. Like I try and write things, and I try and, you know, even with like comedy too. Like when I'm doing stand up or writing, it's like who's my audience, and that's kind of, so I kind of understand that and come into it from a writing and creative perspective too. Like who's my audience is. So I always want to kind of keep that in mind. And my ideal client is basically somebody my age, like in their 30s to 40s with a kid, and they work, they have a career, but maybe haven't done any estate planning. So I want to tailor whatever I talk to them about in something that's going on in their world, like who they listen to.
I would also think that your Facebook Live Ask Me Anything events could give you some, topics to talk about.
Yep. Yeah, that too.
Because clearly, if people are gonna take the time to ask you a question on Facebook, then that is a perfect opportunity to maybe dig in a little deeper in
right.
a written analysis, and make that the basis of some of the content that you use.
Yeah, and I will say there's not been a client generated yet, but there's been at least four or five people that are like, oh wow, I want you to talk to so and so about this, or my dad needs to do something. And they're kind of in the cycle of like me, educating them about it and trying to meet with them. So it's actually been a real I didn't think that would be as lead generating as it was.
One of the challenges I think that we have as attorneys is we look at something like your Facebook Live event, say, okay, I'm going to do this live event, Ask Me Anything, which I like the title, the AMA, Ask Me Anything event. And then you get there and there's one person or two.
Yeah.
And I got to believe, we haven't spent a lot of time on this, but your comedy training and experience allows you to kind of handle that.
Yeah.
You learn how to vamp. You learn how to carry an audience as if there was more than just the two drunks in the audience listening to you.
Yeah, for sure. That's a great point, because it makes it easier to maybe not have a question and not panic. I didn't send out, I usually send out some, like a post and say, hey, I'm going to go live later today. I didn't do that, until about 20 minutes before we started our interview here today. So I might not have any questions today. So I'm just going to, just be engaging. I mean, that's one thing that I think as attorneys, we get too formal with everything. Everything has to be like some buttoned up suit and tie. And I just hated that. I hate that about the practice of law. We're real people. Everyone's a human being. And I just want it to be as engaging as possible and get value from it. It doesn't have to be like me. It doesn't have to be perfect, right? I think we learned that. Yeah. Done is better than perfect. And it's how many times can you just, people want to, they're hiring you as a person. Do they want to work with you? And sometimes I've seen people on Facebook, other lawyers trying to do it, and it's just so robotic. And it's like, oh my God, like this is.
going back to Sam Malay again, Sam, we talked about this on the episode. Sam does a walk. He walks to work.
Yeah.
He lives in Southern Cal. He walks to work and he pulls out that iPhone camera.
Yep.
And in the 5 minutes it takes him to walk to work, he's discussing something about his law practice or his business. Right. And I took a lot out of that because, first off, I got really used to watching him walk to work, so much so that I was like, oh, there's the coffee shop and nobody's at the drive. Yeah, less traffic. And that kind of thing. And so I think we can take away from that as you're describing that there's plenty of time for us to generate content and to do so in a way that is less formal and more engaging. Because, you know, as I tell guests who come on the show, people will, you know, forgive your lack of knowledge, you know, or misstatement, but what they won't forgive is your lack of energy.
Absolutely.
Yep. You know, and I'm sure that's the same in comedy.
Yeah, absolutely
you know, right. Your presence is much more important, and your delivery is much more important than the actual content.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. If you can get away with a lot if the audience likes you. Yeah, you know, that's there's some people that can tell certain jokes and there's some people that can't. Yeah. And it all has to do with, you know, how are you? Are you engaging with them? Are you talking down to them, or are you talking with them? And yeah, it's there's a lot of crossover, and you know, I think that's why I really enjoy.
We used to have a judge here in this county, rest his soul, Judge Barry Hamilton, who also was a musical director, and for many years ran the Bar Review, which was put on by the Bar Association, and it was a bunch of lawyers doing, you know, musical theater.
Yeah.
And he would always give us a pep talk right before the show and said, look, the audience isn't expecting great performances here. And they know you're all attorneys and you're doing this for fun and to raise money for the Bar Association. So you can get away with anything as long as you do it enthusiastically.
Yeah, that's good advice.
Right? And I think that advice is appropriate for you know, folks listening to the program here today. You know, if you're doing content, and particularly video content, but even audio, if you're doing something like this, a podcast, you got to be enthusiastic. You got to bring your A game in terms of energy level. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you come across as that stiff, buttoned-up attorney that nobody really wants to do business with.
Right. One of my favorite professors from University of Miami, he would always say, if you're going to think in a loud voice. It was funny because people was like, what I think is like, well, no. In this class, we think in a loud voice. Or he would say, if you're going to fail loudly. So it's always one of those things where, like you said, you know, have some energy and passionate about what you're doing. And then,
so tell me where you are then with your webinar. Are you still designing it? Have you picked a platform?
Yeah.
Do you have a content? What are you going to do?
Yep. So I went again against the norm. Everyone's doing GoToWebinar and stuff like that. I decided to go with Webinar Jam. Uh-huh. I really like the idea of not having a potential client have to load something else that maybe they don't have to load, you know, so all these separate software. So the cool thing about Webinar Jam is just the link, you know, it uses its own platform just in that link. It's all self-contained. And then it also adds potential for a little bit of automation too, where you can send out, it syncs with ActiveCampaign. And I also modified one of my ClickFunnels links to be the landing page for that webinar. So yeah, the content is, you know, just created already, slides. I had someone help me with some slides. There was a graphic designer that I know that actually would do comedy posters for us.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
It's not getting a lot of work now because there's no comedy shows.
Exactly.
But yeah, we worked together on that.
And so you basically can do a slide presentation with your voiceover as the basis for your webinar.
Yeah, and I'll be a thing with Webinar Jam is you can have a picture of yourself down in the lower, lower part of it. But
in a window.
Yeah. Yep. And I'll have like a brief, you can upload documents to Webinar Jam that makes them downloadable within the webinar. So I'll have like a worksheet to have with contact information and stuff on there for people that are going to join and participate.
That's great. You know, I read an article not too long ago that listed the best software platforms for doing webinars. If I can have it, I'll put my hands on it. I'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah.
But Webinar Jam was up there.
Cool.
You know? And frankly, Zoom Webinar is really taking off as a platform. So I haven't done a bunch of webinars. I've done some Facebook Live events that I recorded and that you know, I make available via YouTube now. Mm-hmm. But I'm kind of in the same boat. I want to do some webinars. And again, mm-hmm. it's one of those things where you have to get used to maybe the first couple or so. You may be doing a webinar for your mom and your next door neighbor.
Yep.
And that's okay.
Right.
Just make sure that the recording is available and it can be evergreen in that respect.
Yeah. Yep. Just it's like comedy. Like work out the kinks and then when you get a big audience, then you're all prepped and ready to go.
Well, yeah. I mean, and that's a really good point that I think people overlook. So I tried to do it, but I only had a couple people. It's not worth it. Well,
right.
Did you learn anything yourself?
Yeah.
You know, do you think you could do a better one next time? Because what would you rather have? 100 people on your webinar that you screw up?
Exactly right.
Or two people on the webinar that you screwed up and learned a lesson from?
Yeah.
You know, I think it's a really important point. I think people overlook that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the same way with, you know, when you're creating an ad. You know, screw it up in the beginning, learn from it, tweak it.
Yeah.
Refine it. Most people who have successful ad campaigns, their first ad wasn't a killer ad.
Yeah, it was garbage.
Yeah. And if you want any further proof of that, go back and listen to my first podcast. Right? It's just, you just learn as you go along. Well, listen, Nick, this has been great.
Thanks for having me.
I really enjoyed spending some time with you today. Tell our audience how they can reach you if they want to follow up with anything that shared. And then I'm going to ask you a little bit to tell us about your comedy career.
Oh, cool. So you can reach me. I'll give you my email. It's just nickleidorf@gmail.com. It's NickLeyd, like dog. It's one of those names you have to spell out. D like dog, ORF like Frank @gmail.com. Shoot me any questions you have and I'd be happy to answer them.
How'd you get into comedy?
It's kind of sounds like a bad dad story, but like right after the birth of my son, 8 years ago, a friend of mine was like, "You've been blowing me off about doing an open mic." So I signed you up for one. So I did this contest.
He pushed you off the plank.
He did. And cause I was always, I was a huge Saturday Night Live fan.
Sure.
Comedy was a huge part of my life. And I just never did it because I was just like, oh, it's just too scared to do it. You know, I'm going to fail and all that kind of stuff. So I did it the first time and I won this competition it turned out it was a competition, not just open mic. So I went up to school and I had to go back the next month and I got like, I think third in that one. And I was just hooked. It is the most fun thing in my life. I miss it all the time now that we're going through this. And I was going to record an album earlier this year. It was going to be my first at this theater in Lansing, and we had to postpone it, obviously. So that's going to be happening hopefully sometime when we can have full capacity theaters.
Lawyer jokes. Who'd have thunk, right?
It's largely autobiographical. I try at the beginning to get them to like, I don't tell them that I'm a lawyer up front because I want them to like me. So I do work it in. And then you can hear sometimes the people the gasp, like, oh no, we liked you. Why are you this? I've been doing it for 8 years. I've been traveling all over. I worked at like the Laugh Factory Chicago, worked with some of my comedy heroes. Nate Bargatze and Kyle Kinane and a lot of different comedians.
That's awesome because I think we need a little more humor in our profession, and
for B, sure.
I think it's a skill set that in any kind of theatrical endeavor, I think is an important skill set for attorneys to learn in terms of presentation, delivery, cadence, speech. It's all important.
Right.
Let's face it. Communication is how we make our money.
Absolutely.
How we ply our trade. So, all right, Nick. Well, thanks so much for spending time with us today. I want to thank you for being a guest on The Law Entrepreneur.
All right. Thanks so much.
Well, there you have it, Law Entrepreneurs. Thanks for being with us today and with this episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I want to thank our sponsors, as usual, Ruby Receptionists, Daylight, and Spotlight Branding. Make sure you swing on by our website at thelawentrepreneur.com, or visit our Facebook page or Twitter account. You can find us anywhere by just searching on The Law Entrepreneur. Also, if you'd be kind enough, I'd love it if you could go to your podcast application and leave us a rating and a review. It helps with our visibility, and it helps ensure that we're there to be found when people come looking for podcasts in the legal space. So once again, thanks for being a part of today's episode of The Law Entrepreneur.